Now, on account of this being a bit of a special podcast, I'm supposed to do a special proper podcast intro, but I have no fucking idea what to do without sounding like a complete wanker. You know, welcome to Slaughter, Dick. But we're in a secret location. It's all quite exciting on account of the fact that we've got two guests. Not usually I ask guests to introduce themselves. Is that all right? So, ladies first.
Hello, my name's Elaine Miller and I do a bit of comedy and I'm a fanny physio on the side.
Excellent. And?
My name's Graeme Linehan. I'm a sometime comedy writer and now doing a bit of comedy and also an activist for women's rights.
Marvellous. Excellent. So, number one, how did the gig go last night?
Well, I've just written a big piece about that for someone.
Give us the scoop. Who cares what time is won?
No, it was strange. It was, you know, it was a very surreal day. I was actually beyond security at Gatwick when I was called and told that the second venue we'd found had also cancelled us.
What would be the first venue that cancelled? Okay, I can understand. I cannot agree, but I can understand.
Sure, no, me too.
That it's an LGBTQI plus venue. They would have got all manner of shit. And although I don't know who they thought it was going to be when Andrew Doyle of Comedy Unleashed says a famous cancelled comedian.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's understandable.
I think what happens with a lot of people is that they hear Graeme Linehan and they go, great, Graeme Linehan, writer Father Ted, IT crowd. And then they, I don't know, go on Google or something like that. And when you Google my name, the first batch of results are always blogs talking about what a monster I am. Or my Wikipedia page, which I can't change because every time we try and change a phrase like anti-trans activist, and I know this because of my solicitors monitored it, but it changes back within 15 minutes.
Wow.
So they're sitting on it and they're just being very... It may be automated, but there's definitely a thing that just prevents anyone from making changes on my
page. You get a lot of... Twitter, let's say, which I'm kind of not really on.
Sure.
But
that's a very good idea.
It's brutal.
Sure.
There. I mean, to be fair... On both sides, you're not backwards about coming forwards.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, my argument. I don't like when people are rude to me or call me a bigot, and when that happens, I give both barrels. I don't see why I should have to take being called a bigot for standing up for women's rights. You know, and that's been happening for 5 years, and I just like, you know, if someone's rude, I just think they're fair game, but. The rest of the time, I do think there's a lot of people in this fight who think they're being kind, who are also kind of wrapped up in a way. They may have a friend who's trans-identified or a son or a daughter. My default position is to be polite and sensitive. But what happens is someone will come into a thread, call me a bigot or make some comment about my wife and family. And I will, you know, you get so much of that I just have a stock response, which is I just say, okay, groomer. Because they used to kind of insult older women by saying, okay, boomer, you know. So I just thought, okay, groomer, because I do think that trans ideology is a form of grooming.
Do you?
Ideological grooming, yes. The idea, for instance, that someone can be born into the wrong body. I don't think that's true. I think that's a religious belief.
Okay.
And so when people say phrases like someone had their sex assigned at birth, that's ideological grooming because our sex is not assigned at birth. It is observed at birth. Sometimes it is observed actually in utero. So for people to say assigned at birth, it is kind of falling into line with an ideology that I think threatens women's spaces, threatens women's sports, threatens the safety of children. And I'm not going to stand for it.
And that is because I, again, you know, on the Twitter and everything, you read so much. well, as much as you can take on every kind of social media and in every kind of media. There, everything it's reported that you've said this, you've done this, they've done this. Just kind of for the record, out your big Irish gob. Is that what you thought from the start? Because I vaguely remember when you started to be, you know, tweet a bit and whatnot. And it seems that the Graham Linehan that's here now is sort of exponentially more sort of angry and bitter. Not that you've not got a lot to be angry and bitter about, but was there a point when you stepped it up or kind of jumped in at the deep end? Was there something that happened, or are you kind of fighting fire with fire?
Oh, that's a great question. There was a point where I decided to jump in. I had already been kind of condemned in a kind of a quiet way. People were saying things like Graham Linehan liked a tweet that said that people shouldn't call women TERFs. You know, mm-hmm. He's a TERF, you know, and I was getting this and I was thinking, this is getting, you know, more and more weird. There's nothing wrong with saying that you shouldn't call women a name that's associated with threats of rape and death. So I got cancer of the testicles. And someone's listening at home in the bath. They just had the thought of my testicles inserted into their brain. What happened was I got a big dose of morphine, and I was lying in bed after the operation.
Well, did you? You Johnny One Ball now?
Yes, yes, yeah. like Hitler.
So the tweets are true.
I was on morphine, and I remember I actually thought, because it was supposed to be a day operation, I was supposed to be able to go home that night. And so when I woke up, I just kind of hopped into my trousers feeling great, and then got dressed thinking I was going home. And then the nurse came in and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, going home." And they said, no, get back into bed." So I got back into bed and I was lying down. And then I thought, why am I so scared of this debate? Why am I so scared of getting involved? You know, there's nothing like, you know, these are reasonable positions. Women's rights are important. You shouldn't send death and rape threats to women. You shouldn't mutilate and sterilize children. All my positions are sound. I'd had a long time looking into it and studying it and trying to figure out whether I'd got something wrong. And I just thought, the time has come. So I tweeted from the actual hospital bed. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Elaine is holding her.
While you were off your nut and morphine.
While I was off my nut and morphine. And the next thing, two things happened. I tweeted a thing saying, yes, I'm a TERF or whatever. I can't remember how I entered into it. And there's nothing wrong with it. These positions are sound. Boom. And I thought, job done, you know. And then I noticed that the pain in my side from the wound was beginning to really tell, you know. And I just had then the next a few hours of the most extraordinary pain, because I think when I jumped up and jumped onto my trousers.
Or it might have been God's punishment.
Exactly. You know, I remember they were saying, you got to go home now. And I'm like, I can't move, you know, and the pain. And every time I moved or did anything, you know, if I farted, it was a crisis. You know, any kind of movement of my body. And I just, and my wife came and saw me and she said, see if you can walk around. And I walked around like a zombie and my face was dead white. And she burst into tears when she saw how vulnerable I was, you know. So they put me back in bed and I was on a trolley. They couldn't find a bed for me. And the trolley was the most painful thing I've ever, it was just awful. And finally I thought, they got me and they found a bed for me, and they put one of these emergency things under me and lifted me onto the bed with me screaming all the way, you know, lifted me onto bed, and I got onto the bed, and it was the most beautiful experience being in that bed, hot NHS bed. It was lovely, you know. So after a while I thought, oh, now I feel a bit more relaxed. I feel a bit okay. I'll have a look at Twitter. And I opened up Twitter and I was being crucified. And not just crucified from random strangers on the internet, from people I knew, you know. One bloke who did the avatar that used to be on my Twitter feed, he said, he was like calling me all sorts of names. And he said, I have a trans child, Graeme. And I said, I have a daughter, you know. And it was like, but it just kept coming in. And I was getting lots of direct messages from people. Graeme, I think you should reconsider all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, no, I've been thinking about it. And there's nothing, I'm not saying anything offensive. This is, you know, and for a long period, I thought, oh, well, I'll just explain and people will understand. And you just couldn't do it. It's very like a religion. You cannot...
it's exactly, I forget who it was, but I come from Paisley.
Yes.
It's like Rangers and Celtic.
Yes.
It's like, you know, left footer or right footer.
Yeah.
And never the twain shall meet.
Yeah. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And you could not argue. I there were all these friends who I was very close, you know, close in that internet way of very friendly online. And... you know, you just, I would say something that I would think would be clearly true. Like, you can't let male-bodied people into a rape crisis centre because the women who go will self-exclude and you will destroy the principle of these safe spaces, you know? I disagree with you. How? Why? I'm not talking about it anymore. That's what I got, you know? And so it was, so I thought, and then I thought, well, it's okay because I have so many lovely progressive friends and so many feminists. They wear t-shirts that say, this is what a feminist looks like. They'll be rushing to my aid any second. And not only did no one help, but some people joined in the kicking, you know? And I was getting more and more confused. And I was thinking, you know, I remember like my wife called the comedian to offer some help on a script and just gave her shit down the line saying, you know, talking about what a terrible person I was, you know. She just called him out of, you know, a sense of, oh, you know, she was starting to write comedy and she thought, now she's kind of a successful comedy writer, you know. And she thought, I'll give him a hand. And he kind of repaid her by abusing her on the phone, you know. I was like, you have my number, you have my email. Yes. Why can't you tell me exactly where I'm wrong? Because they're cowards, because they cannot say their positions out loud, because their positions are so absurd.
Well, I mean, I believe most, I don't know about coward, but, and most of these people have stated their positions, you know, very eloquently and, well, not just, you know, not... to you, and it to me, that's kind of a problem. If I have an argument specifically with you, Elaine, I hope I'd talk to you. And even if minds never exactly meld, you can go, well, I think that bit of Graeme is an absolute fucking nightmare, but on the other hand, you know, he's a really nice guy. He's written many of the most brilliant chunks of comedy that the UK has produced. And I mean, it's very, the whole, I find everything nowadays, for all we're talking about, you know, non-binary this, and that, it's very binary. Mm. The argument is very binary and it's, babies are getting thrown out with bath waters and there's no coming back. I mean, do you ever now, given everything that's happened, wish that the one bollocked morphine addled you had never put out that original tweet and that you'd, I don't know, found a non-social media-led way to help the women that you feel were threatened and all of that. It's just Twitter is toxic and nothing that goes on there seems to get discussed properly.
Sure, but Elaine will tell you, as I do, that there is no correct way to address this issue.
Okay.
You know, like J.K. Rowling tweets like infinitesimally small amount of times compared to me. Mm-hmm. And yet, she's recently just had her name taken off some sort of exhibition of her works in Seattle. You know, you cannot talk about this subject at any volume, in any location. They will come for you because what they know that their ideas are incoherent, that they're putting women and children in danger, and they do not want that discussed. Like, Elaine, you know, your show. Elaine, I met Elaine last year properly when she was doing her show, and... I've been talking for a while, so I'd love to get, you know, what happened to you when you started talking about it. How did it play out for you? You were doing a stage show.
Yeah.
No, you weren't on Twitter.
No, I was on Twitter, but no, I mean, primarily. So because I'm a healthcare professional, I'm obliged to bear in mind that anything that I say has to be evidence-based. That's part of the obligation of being registered.
The rules.
It is a rule. So for 30 years, I've had the discipline of don't say it unless you can defend it in court. That's how all healthcare works in the UK. If you're going to tell something to a patient, you have to actually know what you're talking about, otherwise zip it and go and find out. And I think that's quite a good way to handle Twitter. So
that is never going to happen. If that had to happen on Twitter, there'd be nothing on Twitter, more or less.
And actually, what I've realised is it doesn't matter. What you're saying is exactly my experience. As soon as you say anything which isn't trans women or women, you are condemned.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you have done in the rest of your life. It doesn't matter anything that you've achieved or all the good you have done or been an all-round nice guy. If you say that, then nothing that you've ever done is worth anything because you are a scumbag. Mm. And the advantage, in inverted commas, that I had was I knew that what I'd said I could defend in court because that's just how I operated. So then it became a game for me because I was absolutely resolute that what I had said was factually correct. And it made me a bit fearless. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why in the show that I wrote about vulvas, because Fanny Physio, pelvic health physiotherapist, mm-hmm. for the peers that it turns out hate me calling myself a Fanny Physio, but women are embarrassed by, you know, incontinence and sexual dysfunction. So let's try and reach the women that don't come to clinic. Be frank, there's very few women come and reach, like, come to seek help, so make it more accessible. That was what I was trying to do by using humour as a health promotion tool. And I didn't mind the abuse because...
You got spat on.
I did. Yeah.
By another comedian.
Yeah, yeah. That was interesting. Being harangued in the street and having men stand over you... Because I'm 5'4" and I'm 50. Like, I'm not a fragile wee flower. Do you know, I've been around a bit. This is not my first rodeo. But having somebody that you've known for, say, a decade and liked and think is a proper actual talent and you love their work, tell you, no, you're not allowed to come to my show because of your abhorrent views on trans women. I've never stated anything about trans women because my field is female people and those people are male people. So that's not where my expertise is. Therefore, I could not defend anything that I see in court because I don't have the evidence at my fingertips.
And we're talking, when you say male people, biologically.
Yes.
And physiologically.
Yeah.
I mean, would you, for example, Graham, agree or think that people can identify as a gender... which is not the same as their biological sex.
Yeah, people can do whatever they want. Mm. The problem comes in a very small amount of areas where biological sex is extremely important. Mm. Changing rooms, public toilets, rape crisis centres, shelters, you know? Like, a lot of the people who are so blasé about this ideology, they will never have to go to a shelter or a rape crisis center. They will never be in prison. You know, it's the people who are at the absolute bottom of society sometimes who are in danger. You know, like I have a friend, Kate Coleman, who is in the charity Keep Prison Single Sex. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's a charity or just a group, but yeah. But she told me that a huge percentage, I think it's something like 40% of women in prison have had blunt force trauma to the head because their boyfriends or otherwise.
80%.
It's not.
Yeah, it is.
Really? 80?
They did an MRI scan study. It's just under 80%.
And these are the people that these middle class wankers are putting in prison with men. With men who are only in there 99% of the time. Because they'll get an easier time in prison. And yet they'll get to have sex with people. Mm. It's absolutely outrageous. And you know, my essential point that came from the start of this was, I remember there was a comedian, it was Deirdre O'Kane, and she was using the word TERF. And I said, why are you calling women TERFs? And she said, they hurt my trans and intersex friends. And I said, how many do you have? You know, I mean, like suddenly they're just kind of, you have so many that they're in plural, you know, your intersex friends. What are you talking about? And then I realized that basically the only kind of, what's that word? The only thing you need to the only thing you need to qualify as a trans person is calling yourself trans. And all these people, there's, you know, most of, I think the figure is something like 80% of people, trans-identified men, don't have surgery. Mm. They're not transsexuals. They're cross-dressers. They're transvestites. And so for people to argue that transvestites can go into toilets with my daughter, I'm not having it. I'm not having it.
I mean, do you... I think I'm doing rather well being sensible here. Hardly said fuck at all. I'm sure I've only called about one person a cunt. I'm being so fucking grown up here. Do you not accept, but allow, that sometimes it's for real? That although, you know, there are, it's, I was saying earlier, when I was at school, there was this thing, all light shens are umpty, that thing of, you know, all people dressed as women who rape other women in prisons are... I've lost my metaphor.
I think I know what you're saying. Am I doing...
It does happen, but it doesn't happen all the time, and it isn't all of them. And are you... I feel that your back is so... I mean, it's practically stapled to the wall... In danger of overstating what you believe because you're kind of being pushed into it.
Well, I do kind of see what you mean. All I'll say is that, like, as Elaine knows, there are plenty of trans people, trans-identified people, including people who haven't had an operation, including people who are fully intact, who do not agree with this ideology. I could name, you know, Debbie Hayton, Fiona Orlander, Miranda Yardley. Miranda Yardley is a trans woman who corrects people when they use the phrase she.
Okay, what does she, they like to be called?
He says he. I'm male. Oh, okay. He says I'm male. So and you know, I noticed that when he goes to feminist events, he dresses down out of respect for the women. You know, he is very, he always, I think there's a phrase people say, I don't identify as a woman, I identify with women.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
That's...
There are many trans allies to women and they are treated appallingly. Debbie Hayton was bullied by the people she worked with to an incredible extent, you know, the most childish, pathetic bullying, you know, and it's like, here's another interesting thing about it. There is actually a phrase for transsexuals that they use, trans rights activists. They call them true scum, because, you know, these transsexuals believe, well, I think you have to have an operation to be trans, or you have to actually, you know, it has to be a thing that you've felt forced to do after a long period and you're committed to it and blah, blah, blah. So these kind of people who put on a bit of black fingernail polish call these people true scum. Yeah.
I mean, I was just talking to somebody before you guys arrived. Before Christianity, you know, kind of spread its evil whatnots across the globe, humanity in general was a lot more loose in its identification of men, of male and female. An awful lot of native tribes across the world, possibly not here in what became the UK, have, you know, 3, 4, 5 identifiable, you know, or sexual identities. And there's certainly, even in Scotland, we lived very happily with just what we would call in-betweenies.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on that? Definitely there are only 2 genders.
Well, I wouldn't say, I don't use the phrase gender. I think there are only 2 sexes.
Okay, which is different from gender.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't even know. No one's ever explained to me what gender is. Gender seems to be a euphemism for, I call it a sex personality, you know? It doesn't
That is not a bad description,
but
actually.
You could also just remove the sex part and call it a personality, you know? One of the problems I think that's happening is that young people have a natural and up till now extremely healthy desire to hang around with other people like them, people who are in a tribe, you know? Yep. And unfortunately, the internet destroyed the music industry. Films are kind of no longer there's no longer what we might call the church of cinema, you know? There's nothing to hang on to except for this bizarre ideology that's come out of America, you know, that's queer theory, that's academia, telling people, confusing people about and trying to categorize people and put them into boxes. And unfortunately, because there's nothing else to occupy your time at the moment, everybody's latched onto this. And they're tribal about it, and they feel offended when anyone attacks them, in the same way that I used to feel offended if anyone didn't like the police, you know?
I was in school in the 80s, and you were either an AHA fan or a Bros fan, and you either had a beer widget attached to your trainers or you had leather thongs. And it's true, it's tribalism amongst the young people.
Yeah.
Have lost that because the music, you don't get smash hits. Mm. Everybody was listening to the same music because now you can access all music all the time and get some pretty niche stuff. And the sense of belonging that people get, because the community is a strong thing.
Yeah.
It definitely enhances some people's lives.
And you
That's
are
a good thing.
Looking for an identity, whether whatever kind of identity that is, plus you definitely want an identity that is nothing like that of your mum and dad.
Of your mum and dad, yes.
And
there's nothing on the shelves anymore. There's nothing you can pick up and put on. There used to be, you know, there used to be like punk, goth, whatever it happens to be. You see a lot of trans-identified men and, you know, they're just goths.
There's a psychiatrist that talks about that he got into a great deal of trouble, and he says that this is an iteration of the 5th iteration of goth.
Yes.
Because things evolve over time, and it was no longer cool to be emo. It was not cool to have conditions like eating disorders amongst young female people were 10 a penny when I was at school. And then there was self-harm, and now we have gender issues.
Yeah.
Because what you touched on, Kate Cop. Oh, shh.
She told me. She told me I couldn't.
I have not done that ever. That's just because we were talking about it.
I identify as Cop.
I'm ashamed. I will recant. I've never done that. And I won't do it again.
One of those things you only do once.
Like from a healthcare provision point of view, in order to make a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, you have to go through a system of speaking to psychologists, psychiatrists, and excluding all the other reasons that you might have a feeling of discomfort with your sex body, autism, historical trauma, challenges with accepting your sexuality. There's lots and lots of reasons that people feel like they need to be the opposite sex. They're not all dysphoric. The healthcare system can only treat dysphoria, not autism with a scalpel.
Right.
And because now we have acceptance without exception, and because Ruth Hunt put in place the trans umbrella, that we're all under the same umbrella, then apparently I qualify under the umbrella because I have no sense of gender whatsoever. It's not a thing that I understand. I can understand it in other people and appreciate that it's important in their life, like a faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have a strong sense of faith. I don't have any sense of competitiveness. But in the olden days, I worked in elite sports. So I understand that it mattered to those people a great deal, so much that we train for 4 hours a day to be a nanosecond faster than the other guy. Right? Who cares? You're pretty bloody fast. It's very impressive. Why don't you sit down and have a biscuit? That's why I don't work in sports anymore. But the sense of competitiveness and faith and gender are absent in me. And I was told at work that that makes me agender, which makes me trans.
Yes, it's...
There's not a way to opt out.
It's...
You're in it or not.
Yes, and it's that kind of forcing. You have to fit in to one of the pots. And it's... I don't know when we got so kind of OCD as a nation, but obsessive with labelling. When I was very young, I wanted everyone to call me Ken. Mm. I had a gang.
Mm. You had a gang?
I had a gang.
Of Barbies.
No, it was all boys.
That sounds like you were the leader of the gang.
Well, I was the leader. Oh, yeah.
That's great.
And then when I was in my teens, I was dressed in... like male clothing. I used to take cello lessons, get me, in Paisley.
It's a form of self-harm.
No, well, exactly. And I used to go to my lessons in a three-piece suit. And if I was going any place posh, it'd be a three-piece suit. Mm. And that was just what I did. It didn't immediately put me into a category, you sure. know, it was just wee bit strange, which I quite like being a wee bit, so I'm still a wee bit strange. It's difficult to call it a debate now because it's no longer really a debate. It's angry people howling.
It never was a debate. It never was a debate. The rule is, there was that guy, I think he was in Scotland, he liked two tweets. And now he's had to quit.
The guy at the theatre.
Yeah, the theatre guy. And now he's had to quit. And he's quit Twitter. And, you know, it's basically what we have at the moment is a situation of, it's the Stasi. It's like being monitored by the Stasi, you know. What happened to me and J.K. Rowling is a warning to others. It's basically, don't do that. Don't question this or we will destroy everything. We'll take everything away from you.
Was there ever an option for you to just back off? Or is it the Irish in you that you can't resist a fight?
A little bit of that, definitely. But I'll give you another thing that happened yesterday. A film festival called, Twitter's account called the Ackle Film Festival tweeted something defending me, right? So there followed a whole day of abuse sent to them. Threats, letters, all the usual stuff. They apologized, okay? This morning, more stuff from big names, from the drag artist Panty Bliss. He's coming after them now.
Panty Bliss.
Yeah, yeah. That's our big Irish star, you know.
For what?
For saying, hey, come on, Graham Linehan's not a bigot. He's just trying to figure out what's going on. Something like that. Something very innocent and non-committal. And they're now trying to destroy them. So, the account did, the big mistake they did that no one should ever do is they apologized.
Okay.
And you can't apologize because if you apologize, you just... It pushes you back into a hole where you can't help. The only way we'll get through this is if everybody starts to stand up and say, no, hang on. There's nothing bigoted about these opinions. These are very, very important issues that we need to sort out in an adult way. We have to talk about it. But instead, people go, I'm so sorry. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm going to learn and I'm going to grow, you know. And it doesn't matter because they destroy you anyway. So when I jumped in, you know, I tried to tell the people in my life this, like my wife, they'll never forget. They'll never, they'll do exactly what they're doing now to this film festival. They'll always be on my back about this. So I would rather, and also I found it so important for the future of my daughter that I just thought, I can't drop it. It's too crucial, you know?
And what, I mean, you're, you've got what, 600,000 followers or whatever?
I had nine. I lost 300,000 when I started talking about this.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And you can't know who all of them are and what they're like and whether, you know, some of them might be absolute arseholes. And, you know, just in it because they're, they have, you know, where's she gone? Where they've...
getting you some wine.
Oh, how lovely. Because they're just horrible people with very narrow minds and sort of love a pylon. And you can't really control that short of doing a psychiatric... you know, profile of everyone that follows you. And most of them, you think, will be decent, you know, broad-minded people. But when you, for example, have a go at somebody, then what you get is, I am reliably informed, is a real pylon. And again, you can't control that. Or can you?